We're holding page 36 in Yoma Ois Mem. We learned last time about the whole story with Chonya and Shimi, the two sons of Shimon HaTzaddik, the two different versions of the story. The upshot is, according to both versions, that Chonya ended up running away from Eretz Yisrael. In the one version, he was the victim of a plot by his brother. In the second version, he was the mastermind of a plot which got exposed. Either way, he ran away to Mitzrayim and built an altar over there, and they were bringing korbanos. According to the first version, according to the Meir's version, it was L'shem Avodah Zarah, and according to the Yehuda, it was actually L'shem Hashem, but it's also to do outside the Beis Mikdash if Jews are bringing korbanos over there, or even if it's goyim bringing the korbanos, but Jews bringing them on their behalf. It would also be also only if the Jews are just telling the goyim what to do. Only that would be mutter. Anyway, in that connection, Rabbi Yehuda had brought the pasuk that says in Yeshaya that by Vahoya by Yemahu, on that day, Yem Mizbeach LaHashem B'Soich Eretz Mitzrayim, there will be a Mizbeach to Hashem in the land of Mitzrayim. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying, when a few hundred years later Chonya built this temple of his, then that pasuk was Mekoyim. So now, Omalei Makshisha, Breidid of Chista, Rav Ashi, or Abaya, he asked to the mayor, Haikra, Rabbi Yehuda, my Ovidlai. How is Rabbi Meir understanding the pasuk? Given that according to the mayor, Chonya's temple was for Avodah Zarah. So obviously that's not Lashem. So then in that case, when according to him, was this pasuk fulfilled? So he answers, L'chedetanya. But according to what it says in Ebraisa, it goes back a couple of hundred years, but it goes back to Yeshaya's own times, a couple of hundred years before Chonya. La'achar ma'palteh shel Sancheiriv, after Sancheiriv's destruction, after his whole army was wiped out outside Yerushalayim, and only Sancheiriv and a couple of stragglers of his army are left, Yotze Chizkiya came out of Yerushalayim, now that they're not under siege, u'matzeh bnei melochim shel yoshim b'kronos shel zahav. He found there were princes over there who were sitting in golden chariots. These princes were, they were either allies of Sancheiriv or hostages or some such thing from different nations. In particular, we're going to say that they, in particular, we're going to say some of them were from Egypt. The Medrash mentions, based on analyzing Psukim in Yeshaya and in Malachim, that what happened was Sancheiriv originally came to besiege Yerushalayim, threatened that if you don't surrender, if they don't surrender, he's going to deport everybody. Then in the middle, he left because he heard that Tirhakah Melech Kush, the king of Kush, who at that time ruled over Mitzrayim, is coming to fight against him. So he raised the siege temporarily in order to go deal with that threat, but he warns Chizkiyahu, I'm still going to be back. And Hashem, meanwhile, the plan that Hashem had with all of that, he's going to conquer Tirhakah and his army and take them all prisoners together with a lot of wealth. Then he's going to come back to Yerushalayim and continue the siege. There, his army will be wiped out, and that way, Chizkiyahu and company will get not only the spoils of Sancheiriv himself, but all the spoils they got from Mitzrayim and Kush as well. So Chizkiyahu went out and found these hostages or whatever it is that were sitting in golden chariots. He did unshelo lavad Avodah Zarah, and he made them swear that they won't worship Avodah Zarah, that they were going to accept all the mitzvahs that he's not going to ask them for, but at least that they shouldn't worship Avodah Zarah. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, by Yomahu on that day, you chomish orim be'eretz Mitzrayim, there will be five cities in the land of Mitzrayim, midabris sfas Knoan, who are speaking the language of Canaan, which means Lashon Kodesh, which is spoken in Eretz, is spoken by the Jews in Eretz Canaan. So even though they're living in Mitzrayim, they'll be speaking Lashon Kodesh, v'nishboris la'Hashem tzvakos, and they will be swearing to Hashem. So we see, and the point is, Mefarshim explain over there, the point is, like this, Chizkiyahu wanted to make them swear that they're only going to serve Hashem. He had to make them swear that in Lashon Kodesh, because otherwise, how would he do it? If he makes them swear in Egyptian or some other language, they have no concept of Hashem in those languages, at least they didn't then. So what would they say? They'd say in their language that will serve God, and meanwhile, they'd be having in mind that it means one of their gods, and that would defeat the whole purpose. So he has to make them swear in Lashon Kodesh, and that required them to know at least enough Lashon Kodesh to understand what they're swearing in the name of Hashem Tzvaka. So that's why the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that they were speaking Lashon Kodesh. So Hochol Alexandria Shem Mitzrayim. So they went to Alexandria in Egypt, Uvonu Mizbeach, and there they built an altar of Hallel all of the Shem Shemayim, and they brought korbanos over there for Hashem, which goyim are perfectly allowed to do anywhere in the world, even now. Shenemar. So now that's what this pasuk is saying. By Yemahu Yim Mizbeach Hashem B'Soich Eretz Mitzrayim, that there will be a Mizbeach for Hashem in the land of Mitzrayim. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying that was fulfilled with Chonya's temple, which was L'Shem Shemayim. According to the mayor, that was fulfilled a couple hundred years earlier by these princes of Mitzrayim and Kush who went there to Alexandria and worshipped Hashem over there. Okay. Now the Gemara points out now. So the posik that says about the five cities that Obim Dabras Sfas Knoan, the end of that posik continues, Ir Haheres Ye Omer La'achos, which literally means the city of destruction will be said of one of them. So what does that mean? My Ir Haheres Ye Omer La'achos. So Kedipatagunam Rabbi Yosef. The way Rabbi Yosef teaches it, the Targum on Nevi'im is actually from Yonasan ben Uzziel, who was a few hundred years before Rabbi Yosef. The Gemara usually attributes that Targum to Rabbi Yosef because he was an expert in it. Prospus discusses in some places, is it maybe that he Davka specialized in it because he was blind and he couldn't learn Torah Shebichsav because you have to learn Torah Shebichsav from a written text? Prospus says that's not so. In a case like that where he's blind, he would be allowed to learn Torah Shebichsav Baal Peh. No, it was just he particularly became specialized in and became expert in the Targum.
Who was blind again?
Rabbi Yosef, the Amora. Anyway, so Kedema Targum, Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef translates, and you can find it in Targum Yonas on the Posik. Kauta de Beis Shemesh, the city of Beis Shemesh, the city where they used to worship the sun, which actually is known in history as Heliopolis, which means in Greek the city of the sun, Dasida Lemechrav, which is destined to be destroyed, Yisamar, of it will be said to Hichodim in Hoin that it is one of those five cities. Meaning, with the word Ir HaHeres, actually there's kind of a play on words over here. The word heres with a hey means destruction. The same word with a ches, heres, as the Gemara is going to point out, is a rare poetic word for the sun. So it means this is a city where they used to worship the sun. Now this is going to be one of these five cities where they're going to be worshiping Hashem. Nevertheless, eventually the city with the other four is going to be destroyed, and therefore it will be called, instead of Ir HaHeres, the city of the sun, it will be called Ir HaHeres, the city of destruction. So my mashma dahai cheres lishna de shimshahu. Where do we see the word cheres means the sun? Shenemar, ha'oimel cheres v'lo yizrach, as you find a pasuk in Iyov, talking about the greatness of Hashem, how he runs everything in the world. Hashem tells the cheres v'lo yizrach that it shouldn't shine over ad kechovim yachdim, and Hashem seals up in front of the stars, meaning Hashem makes there be eclipses and occultations and other such things that hide the light of the sun and other heavenly bodies from us. So we see that the word cheres over there means the sun. Agav, that may show, you know, like this, everybody pronounces a samach and a sin the same way. This may be a demonstration that originally they had different pronunciations because cheres with a sin means earthenware. So unless we assume both words were taka pronounced the same, then it may be there was actually a slight difference in pronunciation between them, and eventually that distinction was lost. So that's Adkan Menachos. So this is as far as the piece from Menachos that the author of Ein Yaakov interjected over here, because since we were talking about what happened shortly before Shimon HaTzadik passed away, so then he put in the piece from Menachos that deals with what happened after that. So now getting back to, we said before that during the time of Shimon HaTzadik, special things happened in the Beis Mikdash to show Hashem's favor to the Jewish people. We said the girdle, Lashem, always came up in the Kohen Gadol's right hand, and the strip of red wool that they always turned white, and so on and so forth. So now the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan, Arboim Shana, Kodim Churban Abayis, for the last 40 years before the Churban, Loihaya girdle Olav Yamin. The girdle never came up in the right hand. Meaning, Marsha says, up to that point, so you have like this, Shimon HaTzadik's 40 years, it was always coming up in the right hand. After that, sometimes yes, sometimes no, throughout the next couple hundred years. Now, during these last 40 years, it always came up in the left hand, showing that it's not a sin and that Hashem is not favoring the Jewish people. The strip of red wool was not turning white. In fact, the Gemara mentioned later in the Masechta, for that reason, at that time, they had to make it that the strip of red wool is taken along with the Sur La'azazel and half of it tied to its head and half to a rock. That way, if it doesn't turn white, the only one who will see that and then be disappointed is the guy who took the goat to Azazel. Nobody else will see it. And this way, they won't have to have their spirits crushed by that.
Coming up in his left hand, which is the Gevurah, not the right hand.
Well, because the right hand is Chesed. So when it came up in Lashem, when the one Lashem came up in his right hand, it shows that Hashem is showing favor to the Jewish people. When it comes up in his left hand, then it shows that the western lamp of the menorah did not stay lit, which we learned last time. You have different opinions which one exactly is the western lamp, but whatever the case, we said there that there was a nest going on where it would last longer than the other ones, and it was Eidos that the Shechina rests among the Jewish people. During these last 40 years, that didn't happen. And the doors of the Heichel were opening on their own. And these were big, heavy doors. You have to remember, most doors in the Beis Mikdash were 20 by 10 amos. We learned before about Nicanor's doors that were made out of copper. We said all the other ones were eventually plated with or made out of gold. They were pretty heavy. Josephus describes in his histories that it would take like 20 people to open or close one of them. And here they were opening on their own. Until Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai rebuked them and yelled at them and told them to stop it. But Omaloi, he says, Heichel, Heichel, mipnei ma atam mavis es atzmacha. What are you frightening yourself and all of us as well? Yedea ani b'chosh esoivcho osim b'chorev. Yes, I know good and well that you are destined to be destroyed and that this is a simon of it. Meaning, in other words, Marsha says the point is the Goyim, when they do actually conquer the Beis Mikdash, they shouldn't be able to say it was with our power. They should realize that Hashem made it possible for them to conquer it. But still, why are you scaring yourself? And Marsha brings the Lashon from the Yerushalmi, why are you scaring us? Yes, we know you're going to be destroyed. As in fact, Zechariah ben Ido, the Novi Zechariah, at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, already said in Nebuah, Psach Levonin de Losecha, Levonin, open up your doors, the Seichal Esh Ba'arazecha, and fire will consume your cedars. So now, and the Marsha points out, the word, the Levonin, the simple meaning means a forest, but a forest doesn't have doors. Therefore, the Gemara is going to explain over here that the word Levonin is a reference to the Beis Mikdash. So yes, the Pasuk is saying that open your doors and let the fire that the Beis Mikdash is going to be set afire is going to consume your cedars, but the point is, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, you don't have to do it all this time in advance. It's enough dial at Sarah B'Shaita, enough that we'll have that trouble when it happens. You don't have to start doing it now. From that time, by the way, 40 years before the Churban, is also we find in other Gemaras, that's when Reb Tzadik started fasting to avert the Churban. That's when the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas HaGozis, and because they couldn't judge Dini Nefashis anymore, because murders were becoming too prevalent. So at this time already, there were signs, there were portents of the Churban starting to happen. And Amar Reb Yitzchak Bar Tavloi, Lama Nikra Shmoy Levonin, why is the Beis Mikdash called Levonin? Shemalbin Abnei Seyam Shal Yisrael, because it whitens and cleans up the Averis of the Jewish people. We find in other places as well. For example, when Moshe Rabbeinu says that he wants to see a Hora Tov Azev HaLevonin at the beginning of Parshas Baraschanan, Rashi explains over there that it means he wants to see the site of the Beis Mikdash. And Amar Rab Zutter Bar Tovya, Amar Rab, Lama Nikra Shmoy Ya'ar. We also find that the Beis Mikdash is called a forest. Not just that it's called Levonin, which in Poshet Pshat is the name of a forest. The Beis Mikdash is actually called by the word forest, Yichtiv Beis Yar HaLevonin. The Pasuk mentions among the constructions of Shlomo HaMelech, it mentions a hall called Beis Yar HaLevonin. Now, in the simple Pshat, this was not the Beis Mikdash, but rather a summer palace that Shlomo had built for himself. It was called Beis Yar HaLevonin, Mephoshim explained there on the Psukim, first of all, because it had a lot of wooden columns in it, so it resembled a forest, and also it may have actually been built in a forest where the air was cooler. Whatever the case, the point is, here the Gemara is doubting that this Beis Yar HaLevonin is actually a coded reference to the Beis Mikdash. So why would the Beis Mikdash be called a forest? Lo Malach, Ma Yar Malavlev, Af Beis Mikdash Malavlev. Just as a forest blossoms and produces leaves and fruit, so does the Beis Mikdash. The Amar Rav Oshia, as Rav Oshia says, we learned this earlier in the Masechta, B'shar Shabana Shlomo Beis Mikdash, when Shlomo built the Beis Mikdash, not by kol minim godim shel zahav, he planted in all kinds of delicious fruit trees made out of gold, and they would produce fruit at the appropriate times. So a tree that was made in the image of an apple tree would produce fruit at the time when real apple trees give fruit. And the same thing with every other kind of fruit. The kivan shall ruach min hashev esperhen, when the wind would blow on these trees, mashirim esperesein, then it would cause the fruits to fall off the tree. And we learned before, Marashah refers to over here, that since the fruits were made out of gold, we don't mean they were edible. We don't mean that these trees produced edible fruit. We mean they produced golden fruit, golden apples and golden whatever. And the point is, you wouldn't have any way of knowing when they're ripe. Therefore, you have to wait till they fell off before you know they're ripe and ready for the taking. Exactly that. In other words, he made images of trees there throughout the Beis Mikdash made out of gold. We find in the Psukim, in Melachim, and in Divrei Hayamim, where it describes that the inside walls of the Heichel they had on them designs, they had on them reliefs of palm trees and kruvim. So now we're saying that it wasn't just palm trees, there were other kinds of trees as well that were on the walls or in the whole Beis Mikdash complex, and they were producing, B'derech Nes, they were producing golden fruit. Marsha points out, we're going to learn in the Gemara soon, that there's a type of gold mentioned in connection with the Beis Mikdash called Zahav Parvoyim. We're going to talk about it in a little bit in the Gemara. So the Gemara is going to explain in a bit that Zahav Parvayim is called that because it was the color of Dam Porim. It was red, like the color of the blood of bulls. But Marashah refers to the Yerushalmi that says that Parvayim is also Meloshin Peiris. So therefore, that this was gold that actually B'derech Nes would produce Peiris. And that way, the Koyanim would collect these golden fruits and they would have an extra source of income from that. So when the wind would rustle against them, Mashirim es Periseim, then that would cause the fruit to fall off, and the Kohenim could collect them. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yirash Kalavonin period, may his fruit rustle like Lavon. So again, Lavonin being a reference to the Bismikdash, the context of the pasuk is saying that the Jewish people should produce a lot of fruit, which will rustle and be ready for the taking. Like Levonin, so here we're saying, since Levonin means the Beis Mikdash, then the implication is that the Beis Mikdash produced fruit, which the wind would rustle and shake the fruit off the trees. Well, it doesn't say specifically, but someplace in the Beis Mikdash complex. In the Beis Mikdash someplace. So again, like I said, if you look in the Pesukim in Malachim, you'll see it describes over there all over the walls of the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the reliefs of the sticking out of the wall. There were engravings, the opposite of engravings that stick out of the wall of palm trees and Kruvim, and then those were overlaid with gold. So either we mean those, and there wasn't just palm trees, but other trees, or we mean elsewhere in the Beis HaMikdash complex. The Gemara is not specifying where they were exactly. Anyway, once the Goyim entered the Heichal, then those trees dried up and they stopped producing fruit. A different version of it that's in some Midrashim is not when the Goyim came into the Heichal, but when Menashe put up an idol in the Heichal, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So then it dried up. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ferach Levonin Umlal, as the Pasuk says, the flower of Levonin has been cut off. Again, taking Levonin to mean the Beis Mikdash, so it means there comes a point when those flowers and fruits of the Levonin are cut off and no longer available. But in the future, Hashem will restore that to us with the third Beis Mikdash. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Poroyach Tifrach V'Sogil, it will blossom, it will definitely blossom, and it will rejoice. Af Gilas V'Ranin, it will be very, very joyful and very happy. Kavod ha-Levonin nitan lo, the glory of the Levonin will be given to it, meaning the glory of the Levonin, that glory of the Beis Mikdash, which involved Poroyach Tifrach, which involved blossoming and flowering, will come back in the third Beis Mikdash. And then the Kohenim will once again be able to have extra parnasa from that. Okay. The Gemara goes on further down on the Amud to talk about the Kohen Gadol again. So he comes to do the second vidui. He's already done one vidui on the par Kohen Gadol on the previous perek. Now after he does the Gadol on the two Seirim, then he goes and does the next vidui, which is also on the par again. So Tananabon, and Asora Pomin Mazgu Kohen Gadol's Hashem Boi Bayom. 10 times the Kohen Gadol would mention Hashem, the Shem HaMefodosh, on that day of Yom Kippur. Shlosha Bavidu Yudishin, which Marashah points out, therefore, that what it means is that you have, it was the 10th day, and you have 10 Kedushas, so you have a complete thing of Kedusha on that day, the perfection of Kedusha on that day. So 10 times, Shlosha Bavidu Yudishin, 3 times in the first vidui, because he starts by saying Ona Hashem Chatosi Avisi Pashaiti. Then he continues Ona Hashem or Ona Vashem, according to the different Yusais, Kapano. And we say, when we say it in the Avodah of Yom Kippur, we say Hashem in those places. The Kohen Gadol would actually say the Shem HaMefodosh. He would say Ona and the Shem HaMefodosh Chatosi Avisi Pashaiti. Ona the Shem HaMefodosh Kapano, etc. And then he would finish off Kiva Yemazi Chaper Aleichem Lotareschem Kochat Seichem Fnei Hashem Titaru. And also he would use Hashem's name. So you have 3 by the first vidui, or shloshim vidui sheni, 3 by the second vidui, which he's saying on behalf of all the koyanim, or shloshim asorah mashtalayach, another 3 when he does the vidui on the asorah mashtalayach before he sends it off, which is later on in the masechta, ve'echad begodolus, and 1 time when he does the godol, when he says la'ashem chatas. So altogether 10 times that he's saying the shem hamafodesh. It even happened 1 time that he said the word on Hashem, meaning again with the actual Shem HaMefodesh, and his voice could be heard as far as Yericho. Now, how far is that? From Yerushalayim to Yericho is 10 parsa. A parsa is about between 2.5 and 3 miles, so you're talking somewhere around 25 to 30 miles. And yet you could hear it that far. Sir Dalsus Hechel Hayanishma Bishmoina Tchume Shabbos. The sound of the hinges of the Hechel, of the door of the Hechel opening, where again we said before it was a very big, heavy door, you could hear that 8 Tchume Shabbos away from the Har HaBayis. Tchume Shabbos is a mil, 2,000 amos, which is around a little over half a mile. So eight Tchume Shabbos would be about 5 miles away. Now Tosfos points out that the Gemara in Tamid says that you could hear it in Yericho. So then, and we just said Yericho is 10 parasa away, which is a lot more than 8 Tchume Shabbos. 8 Tchume Shabbos would be 2 parasa, because there were 4 mil to a parasa. So Tosfos Yishonim actually says, okay, it must be that all Gemara over here, this Braise, is disagreeing with the Mishnah and Tamid. However, Tosfos over here finds a couple of ways to reconcile them. One of them is that you could hear the noise of the hinges 8 Tchume Shabbos away, but the noise of the actual gate itself, that you could hear further all the way to Yericho. Another possibility is that 8 Tchume Shabbos, within 8 Tchume Shabbos, within the 5 miles or so, you could realize that this is the noise of a door opening. You hear the squeaking. From Yericho, you would hear some kind of indistinct noise. If you knew that the doors of the Beis Hamikdash are being opened at that time, you could identify it as that sound, but otherwise you would just hear like a faint noise that you couldn't tell. The Ritva points out another possibility is that, first of all, this that it went as far as Yericho is only when Osin Ritzon Shamakim, only when the Jewish people are behaving the way Hashem wants, then Hashem would cause that nest to happen. And that's part of the answer. At the time when the nest happened, you could hear as far as Yericho, but even when not, Pederach HaTeva, it was loud enough to be heard a few miles away. The Ravid actually has an interesting point, which he says on the Mishnah and Tamid, where here we're going to mention a few other things that they could feel as or hear as far as Yericho. So now, Poshet Pshat is, it means in the whole distance, anywhere you would be on the road between Yerushalayim and Yericho, you would hear these sounds and smell these fragrances and so forth. The Ravid says not necessarily. He says Yericho has special kedusha because it was the first city that the Jewish people conquered in Eretz Yisrael, and they declared it Chedem Lashem, which a Chedem is a type of hekdesh. They burnt down the whole place, and they took all the gold and silver of it and all and brought it to the Mishkan. So therefore, it has a certain degree of kedusha, to a certain degree, he says, on a par with Yerushalayim. Therefore, you had a special thing that the sounds and the smells and so forth of Yerushalayim specially could be felt in Yericho, but not necessarily in any place between them.
So this
way, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Izim Shib Yericho, Hoyums Achis Merech Torus. The goats in Yericho, the fragrance of the Torus went so far to Yericho that the goats over there would sneeze from the smell of the Torus. Noshim Shib Yericho Ainsrichasim Merech Torus. The women who lived in Yericho didn't even need to wear perfume because the fragrance of the Torus was so strong in the city. And in Yerushalayim itself, even the kalos, who generally wear more perfume and more spices, even they didn't need to wear such things in Yerushalayim because of the fragrance of the Torah. Now, Tosfos brings up an interesting point over here. The Gemara discusses in Pesachim that the intangible things of Hekdesh, for example, the sound, the beautiful sound of the instruments playing the music, for example, or the sight of the beautiful Beis Hamikdash, or the fragrance of the Ketores, Me'ilah doesn't apply to such things because they're intangible, meaning a person has enjoyed the fragrance or enjoyed the music or whatever, he hasn't committed Me'ilah, he doesn't have to pay the Beis Hamikdash for it. But the implication is, Tosfos is saying, it's also. So in that case, what are we saying that the women wouldn't have to wear perfume in Yerushalayim and even the talis wouldn't because of the fragrance of the Ketores. The Gemara discusses over there, you have a case, what's called loy efshir v'loy kamachavim. You have, it's impossible to avoid it because it's permeating the whole city, but you're not intending to. Fine, the Gemara says over there, according to Rava, it's not a problem. But according to Abaya, wouldn't it be an issue for them to do it? So Tosfos answers, even Abaya would say, all it is you're not allowed to come closer in order to enjoy it. But if you're there and you're smelling it and you can't help it, then even Abaya would agree it's not also.
Yeah, it's a little matter. Yeah. What's that word you said he had committed what?
Loy efshir v'loy kamachavim.
It's before that. He committed something.
Me'ilah. Me'ilah is when a person misuses property of the Beis Hamikdash, where then if he does it b'shogeg, then he has to bring a korban and repay hekdesh for it. And if he doesn't amaze it, then he gets malchus. Yeah. So that's one answer. Tosfos Yishonim and different other Mephoshim give different other answers. Also, the Ritva and several other Mephoshim point out over here that we learned a few days ago, we learned about Beis Avtinas. They made a special tnai when they got married that their wives would not use perfume. Well, in Yerushalayim itself, they shouldn't need it, if we're saying that. So that's the point. In other words, that the Ritva says fine, but the richer women in Yerushalayim still would wear perfume and would wear spices, because they didn't consider just the fact that there's a fragrance of it in the city that might be good enough for the regular people, but they want more. So here the Beis Avtinas was saying, even though we're high class people, nevertheless we're gonna not do that. Different other Mephoshim point out other possibilities. The Rif points out over here maybe they had, even after the Churban, they still continued to tell their wives not to wear perfumes, so people shouldn't think that maybe they kept some of the Ketores after the Churban and all continued to using it. And then Yon Yaakov says, look, I mean, after the Ketores was during the time when the Ketores is being brought, then yeah, the smell is overpowering. After that, it would dissipate to some extent, and therefore normally women would wear perfume at such times, and we're saying Beis Avtinas wouldn't do that. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omer of Yosi ben Dogoi, Izim hoyu lo abba bahore michmar. My father had goats in the mountains of Michmar, or Michvor, it's really supposed to be. It's an area in Evra Yarden. A number of the Mephoshim point out over here that in Parashas Matos and in other places, you have mention of a city in Evra Yarden called Yazir, and the Targum trend then, and some of the Targum translated as Michvor. So these Hori Michvor is an area in Evra Yarden, what's currently, you know, today Jordan. Anyway, they were sneezing from the fragrance of the Ketores. So in other words, he's saying beyond even what we said before, that the goats in Yericho would sneeze from it. He's saying also the goats that are even in Evra Yagin, further out than Yericho, they also would smell the fragrance and sneeze from it. Here's another example to show you how powerful the fragrance of the Ketores is. Sochli Zokanechad, a certain old person once told me, Pamachas Alakti L'Shiloi, one time I went to Shiloi, and this is already over a thousand years after the Mishkan Shiloi had been destroyed. Ve'erachti Reach Ketores M'ben Kosleha, and I could still smell a fragrance of Ketores from the walls. Meaning, in other words, that Marsha points out, the smell that was in the air, of course, would have long since dissipated, but the smell that was that got absorbed into the walls, that was still there a thousand years later. Nowadays, you go to the area of Shiloh, you won't find any remnants of walls over there, at least not that are identified as being from the Mishkan, but in Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha's times, apparently they still existed. Further on in the parak, it talks about Bolei Etzel Parah Shniyah v'chola. So he comes the second time to the par, and he says the vidui. And the first time he had said the vidui for himself and his family. The second time now he's saying the vidui for himself, his family, and all the kohen. Mivnei Aaron Am Kadesh Shecha, as we say in the Seder Havodah on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara asks, why? Why does he not mention them the first time, only the second time? And the reason is Tonet Vedav Shmo Kachi Midas Adin Nesenis. It's only proper according to the logic of the din should be that way. Yovei Zakei VeChaper Alachayev. The one who is already innocent should come and do kapara on behalf of the ones who are still guilty. Val Yovei Chayev VeChaper Alachayev. And it's not appropriate that the one who himself is still guilty should accomplish kapara for those who are also still guilty. Meaning, in other words, until the kohen does his vidui, we assume basically that he's been forgiven on the spot there. So therefore, now he's the Zakai. Now it's appropriate for him to be davening on behalf of the other Kohenim and asking Hashem to forgive their Aveiros. But until then, it's not really appropriate. Now, for him to be saying for his family the first time, fine, that Ishtek Gufrei and his family is also kind of an extension of him. But to say on behalf of the rest of the Kohenim, that we have to wait until he himself is a Zakai. Further on, it talks about that. So the Kohen Gadol is. So now the Kohen Gadol goes and shechts the par. Now the Mishnah describes at that point it's going to be a while before he actually uses the blood of that par to sprinkle. We don't want it to congeal. Meanwhile, so the Mishnah says they would give it to somebody who would stand there on the roiva de revi shebehechol, on the fourth row of stones in the hechol, to stir it, and he would continue stirring it until the Kohen Gadol was ready to take it from him and do that part of the avodah. The Gemara is bothered by the question that he can't be in the Heichel itself, because when the Kohen is going to do the next part, when he's going to be bringing the Ketores in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the next major thing after this, nobody is allowed to be in the entire Heichel. So therefore, so the Gemara explains, it doesn't mean, and it doesn't mean inside the Hekel, it means outside the Hekel. They count four rows of stones that are of stone tiles on the floor, and that's where this guy would stand and stir the blood. So he's not inside the Hekel itself. We say that in the Seder HaVodah Yom Kippur. We have the expression over there that he would stand, because he had to be outside the Hekel. So that leads the Gemara into a long discussion about the point of doing what avodas do people have to be not present. So the Gemara establishes like this. Every day we know Ktoras is brought in the Hekel on the Mizbeah HaZahav. The Gemara learns from Sukkim that at that time, nobody is allowed to be in the entire Hekel or in the area Ben Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach. You have outside the Hekel, you have the Ulam, the entryway into the Hekel. Beyond that, you have a 22 Amma area until the foot of the Mizbeach. That area has a higher degree of Kedusha. It's called Ben Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach. Kohenim who haven't cut their hair are not allowed to go in there. Kohenim who have ripped clothes are not allowed to go in there. There's a number of other things that it mentions in a Mishnah in Kalim. So now the Gemara establishes that when a regular Kohen is doing the Ketores on the Mizbeach HaZahav, nobody is allowed to be in the Hekel or in that area Ben Ulam HaMizbeach. On the other hand, when the Kohen Gadol does the Ketores on the special Ketores of Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, people are allowed to be Ben Ulam HaMizbeach. They're just not allowed to be in the entire Hekel. So the Gemara discusses why is that so? Tonet Veda Bishmal Al Mak Torus Mechaperes, because after all, what is Torus a kapara for? Al Lashon Hara. It's a kapara for Lashon Hara, as we find in Parashas Korach, the Jewish people were saying Lashon Hara about Moshe and Aaron after the whole story after Korach and his group was swallowed up into the ground and burned and whatever. You had people coming and accusing Moshe and Aaron, Atem Amitem as Amashem, you've caused Jews to die. And then the result was there was a plague, and Aaron had to stop it with Ketores. So we see that Ketores is machaper for Lashon Hara. So therefore, it's only appropriate. Yoveh Dover Sheba Chashai V'Yichaper Al Ma'aseh Chashai. So it's appropriate that something that takes place in secret should be machaper on Lashon Hara, which usually is said in secrecy. So that's why, in other words, so we're saying that the Ketores is brought in secrecy in the sense that, again, like we're saying, when the Kohen is bringing it, everybody has to stay far away. So nobody else is present. He's doing it all by himself, and that's Bachashai. So therefore, it's similar in that regard to Lashon Hara, which is also said in secrecy.
This was a Kohen in the fourth row that was staring.
Bapashtos, it was a Kohen, yeah.
What?
Bapashtos, it was a Kohen. I don't know if it actually said one. I have no idea. I mean, in between, after the Kohen has shechted the par, in between, he has to, the next major thing he does after that is he takes the kaf and machta, the spoon of ketores and the pan of coals, and goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and offers that over there, and only afterwards is he taking this blood. How long was the guy standing there stewing it? I have no idea. Yeah. Okay. The point is, in other words, that's what we're saying. The Ketores is Maisa Chashai. It's something done in secrecy, in privacy, because we're saying nobody is allowed to be in the Hekel, and in the case of the regular daily Ketores, in between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, while it's being brought. So the Gemara goes on to say, so now at the end of the Perek, it starts talking about, or further on in the Perek, it talks about, so now the Kohen Gadol is going onto the top of the Mizbeach, and he's taking a shovel and taking with it coals off the Ma'arachal, there was a special wood pile on the Mizbeach, just on Yom Kippur, that was meant to provide coals for this purpose. So the Kohen Gadol, in other words, every day, there's Machlokas in the Mishnah, how many there were every day, but everybody agrees that there was one extra on Yom Kippur for this purpose. So now the Kohen Gadol would go up there, he would take a golden shovel and use it to shovel some coals out of that pile, and those would be what he'd take into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So then the Mishnah goes on to mention a bunch of differences between, like this, every day a Kohen would go up there and shovel and take a shovel full of ashes to burn the Ketores on the Mizbeach HaZahav, because there's no fire burning there, they have to bring in coals from the outside. But the Mishnah mentions a whole bunch of differentiations between how it was done every day versus today. Every other day, they would use a silver shovel for scooping up the coals, because you don't want to wear it out faster than necessary, because gold is expensive. Like we've learned before, and then he would pour it into a golden one. Here, in order to spare the Kohen Gadol the exertion, they would have him shovel it with a golden one in the first place. And the Mishnah goes on to mention a whole bunch of other differences, one of them being that the Mishnah says every other day, the golden shovel that they would use to bring the coals into their Hekel would be made out of regular yellow gold. Yorick, the Mishnah calls it, but the word Yorick we often think of as meaning green, but the truth is it actually means green or yellow. There's even a Tosfos in Sukkah that mentions it may even mean blue sometimes. Whatever, the gold was a normal color of gold, yellow, but today it was red. Today it was red, which is the Gemara is going to say now, was a higher quality gold. So Omer of Chista, Shiva Zahavim Hain. There are seven types of gold, seven grades of gold. Zahav Uzahav Toiv. The first one, Zahav, regular gold, Uzahav Toiv, good gold. What is the difference between good gold and regular gold? Maosha quotes Tosfos that says that it means good gold. It brings from the Yerushalmi. It means the kind which is already so refined that when you refine it, nothing more is lost. Like this regular gold has various other elements mixed in with it, and when you refine it, then those burn off at lower temperatures, and you're left with a pure gold. This is the Zahav Tov is already such pure gold that nothing else is going to be lost in the refining. Do we have seven different kinds? I don't know. You'd have to ask a goldsmith, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, nowadays they can alloy gold with different metals. Are we talking about different alloys over here? Are we talking about grades of how refined the gold is itself? I don't know. Anyway, Uzahav Ophir. The third one is called Gold of Ophir. The fourth one, Vizahav Mufaz. Vizahav Shochut, Vizahav Sogur, Uzahav Parvayim. The Gemara is going to define what each of these is. So first of all, so Zahav was a Hav Toy. Where do we see the first two grades? Good gold, regular gold, and good gold. Shenema was a Hav Haaretz Hahitoy. You have in Parashas Bereishis when it mentions the river Gihon, which it says over there, surrounds the whole land of Cush, and it says the gold of that land is good. So that implies, in other words, there's plain gold, and then there's good gold. The gold that you would find in Cush would be the second kind. The third kind, Zahav Ophir, is so-called De Ossi Me Ophir, the third kind. Can we do this afterwards, please? Zahav Ophir, De Ossi Me Ophir, is so-called because it comes from a place called Ophir. We find in Psukim that Shlomo HaMelech sent people together with Chiram's people to go collect gold from there. Later on, we find that Yehoshaphat tried to do the same thing in partnership with Achaziah Melech Yisrael, who was a Rasha, and the ships broke up and the whole thing failed, and a Navi came and told him, you try to join together with a Rasha, your efforts are going to fail. Anyway, we see that Ophir was a place where there was very good quality gold, and therefore it deserves a name of its own. The fourth one, Zahav Mufaz, is called that Shadoma Lepaz because it resembles, it gleams like Paz. Rashi says that Paz, means a pearl. So it's gold that gleams as shiny as a pearl. A pearl, yeah. The next one, Zahav Shochut, is so called Shenitva Kechut. It can be, it's soft and it can be spun at like threads. We find actually the gold that they used for the Mishkan, it says they didn't spin it into threads, they cut threads. It says right there, they beat very thin, very, very thin layers of gold, and then they cut them into thin strips to have the gold that they used for the clothes of the Kohanim. Here we're saying there's an exceptional kind called Zahav Shochut. Each of these is mentioned someplace in Tanakh. The Zahav Shochut is mentioned in connection with Shlomo HaMelech, so it was a kind of gold that was soft and could be spun like threads. The next one is... What?
The highest quality?
That's not the high. We're not at the highest quality yet. We're listing them in the order of quality. The next one, Zahav Sogur. The next one is called closed gold, which is also mentioned in connection with the Beis Hamikdash. It's called that. B'sharshim niftach kol hachanuyos nisgaris. When anybody opens up a store to sell that kind of gold, all the other stores selling gold close because they know nobody's going to be interested in buying our gold when this gold is available. Zahav Parvayim, the next one is called Zahav Parvayim, Shadoma L'dam HaPorim, because it resembles the blood of bulls, it's red. And that's what we're saying, that's the kind that they used for the shovel that the Kohen Gadol used on Yom Kippur. So that's, you have seven. Maosha relates this to the fact that you have seven Koichle Lechas, seven moving heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and five of the planets. And those have an effect on earth, and therefore, and he goes on to explain that you have gold versus silver. Gold in those times was worth 12 much of silver, because gold relates to the sun, and silver relates to the other mazalos, and then he talks about the gematria of it, so therefore, that's why you have seven. On the other hand, Rav Ashi Yom HaChamisha Hain, Rav Ashi says there's only five kinds of gold. Each one within it has a regular kind and a toiv kind. So according to him, altogether, there are five main kinds, starting from Zohav Ofer, and within each one you have regular and toiv. Tani Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in Ibrahim. Every other day, the shovel that they used for the coals was made out of yellow gold. Today, on Yom Kippur, it was made out of red gold. Behind was Zahav Pravayim. It was Zahav Pravayim, which resembles the blood of bulls in that it's red, and that's the highest quality gold. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola. What's today? Yud Gimel Kislev. So the Rebbe was talking about Mashiach, and he says, B'poil. We have to be ma'oder, and we have to announce everywhere that in order to accomplish this galus of Mashiach and the coming of Mashiach taketh miyad, every single yid and noshim v'taf has to increase in learning Torah, especially in Yoni Mashiach Agola. Even better, this learning should be barabim with 10 people or more. Besides, you have the advantage of asara shiyoshim v'oshim v'torah shkinah shirei b'neim. Especially also, you have an advantage that it causes more effect on people and a greater simcha and a greater hispilos, that becomes greater. That makes a person feel more greatly the yearning and the looking forward to Mashiach Kam. Continuing on halacha, and just to finish on this matter of men with Shabbos candles and what happens if they miss. Rabbi Elzeber just pointed out to me right before the shiur over here that I was mentioning the other day opinions that say that Taka men shouldn't have to do it for various reasons. On the other hand, he mentioned Reb Chaim Kanievsky, says that the reason behind it is because the woman is the Akeres Abayis. So in that case, yes, if in a particular household the man is the Iker Abayis, then yes, it would come out based on that logic that he would have to light the extra candle if he misses one time. Again, if it actually happens in practice, ask a Rav, but this is a possibility at least.
Sure.